coming up on Making Democracy Work, another candidate forum hosted by the League.
You're listening to Studio 809 Podcasts, the cure for common apathy and indifference. Reported side effects include a sense of being informed and engaged. Ask your doctor if Studio 809 is right for you.
Casting an informed vote is your right and your duty as a citizen. We're gearing up for the November election and bringing candidates to you virtually with our candidate forums. The League is hosting many candidate forums in person and virtual. We'll be replaying all of the forums as episodes of Making Democracy Work, so we've got one for you now. Thank you for being an informed and engaged citizen. This is the League of Women Voters candidate forum for Colorado State Senate District 12. I am your host, Shelley Roars. I am the spokesperson for the League of Women Voters here in the Pikes Peak region. We are coming to you live from the Community Prep School, and joining us this evening, our candidates are Mr. Mark Snyder and Mr. Stan Vanderwerf. Our moderator this evening joining us is Ms. Allison Zimmerman with KOAA. So thank you, Allison, for joining us. I'm just going to let you take it away. It's all yours.
Okay, we're going to get right into it. Thanks, everyone, for being here tonight. Hopefully, we'll have a very exciting discussion. We're going to go ahead and get started. We'll have those opening statements, and then League of Women Voters has decided to provide candidates with the first five questions. So from those opening statements, we'll get into those questions. We will begin with Candidate Snyder for your two-minute opening statement. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Allison, and thank you, Shelley. Thank you to the League of Women Voters, of which my wife and I are longtime proud members. Thank you for hosting this. I am Mark Snyder, State Representative for House District 18, candidate for Senate District 12. I wanted to kind of start off a little bit about me. I am an attorney, almost 30 years now here in Colorado, practicing wills, trusts, and estates. Really, the last 15 years, I've specialized in working for families with special needs, often children with disabilities like autism, Down syndrome, even traumatic brain injuries and other things. But that's been a very fulfilling career for me out here in Colorado. I first ran for office in Manitou Springs in 2003. So I served one and a half terms on city council at large, 6 years as mayor. I served on every board and commission, literally in El Paso County, including chair of the Council of Governments, Regional Building Commission, Board of Health, so many others too. It's been really informative. I tell you that because my 6 years in the House, where I've been a Business Affairs and Labor Committee member, Judiciary Committee member, on the Finance Committee all 6 years, the last two as chair of the Finance Committee. That local experience really informs me on what's good legislation and what the flaws may be with legislation. I always begin with, is that going to work for the people down here that I represent? Is it implementable? Is it an unfunded mandate? And if it is, I find ways to correct that. The last thing I want to talk about is what's often called the Democratic agenda. But the truth is, it's a bipartisan agenda. Just last year, we passed historic bills in housing, renters, in health care, in student success, higher ed, workforce development, the environment, protecting us from gun violence. I promote a culture of responsible gun ownership. If I'm elected to the Senate, I'll continue that work just as I have been the last 6 years. Thank you.
All right, and next we will hear from Candidate Vanderwerf. You have 2 minutes for your opening statements.
Well, thank you also, Allison, and thank you to the League of Women Voters for holding this forum. This is really wonderful. It's great that you're doing this for all the different races. It's also kind of nice to do them separately, because otherwise it's really just too many candidates and you don't get that much of an opportunity to talk about some detailed policy. I'm Stan Vanderwerf. I am an El Paso County Commissioner. I've been that for almost 8 years, and I am your candidate for State Senate District 12. Before I talk a little bit more about my background and so forth, I'd like to introduce my wife, Betsy, who's in the audience. If you could raise your hand, so she's here with me tonight. Thank you for being here, Betsy. Just a little bit about my background. As a county commissioner, you may know that we actually also address legislation. It's at the local level, but we're also executives because we're a board, and the county executive reports to us, as well as the county attorney. We're also judges in some capacity, dealing with some type of legal issues, depending on what they may be. So we actually serve in all of those three different roles. I'm also a 28-year Air Force veteran. I served in combat in Iraq. And I'm an industrial engineer by degree, but I also have several master's degrees that will all serve me well as a state senator. As an Air Force guy, as a county commissioner, I've dealt with large public budgets, complicated programs, the politics of all of those environments, lots of people, and these are the kinds of skill sets that will serve me well, again, when I go to the state Senate. I'm also a volunteer and a community leader. I volunteer for Habitat for Humanity and get involved in a lot of different charities. I belong to Angel Flight West and fly missions to take cancer patients from remote areas around the country to hospitals so that they can receive treatment. And I just love living in Colorado Springs. This is a great place to live, and I would be honored to serve our community here as a state senator.
All right, we'll get into those questions that were sent to candidates by League of Women Voters. And we will begin with Mr. Vanderwerf. For this first question, you will have 1 minute. What experience do you have working with organizational budgets?
Yes, I think this is a great question, and I kind of touched on it briefly in my opening statement. So as Air Force officer, I have dealt with really large public budgets. Later on in my career, those were billion-dollar budgets annually, which is actually far larger than what the county currently generates in revenue. And the revenue in the county is also a large public budget, and of course the state has that as well. So these are large organizational budgets that are public in nature. Now, in addition to that, I've created several companies and have worked on budgets trying to keep those companies running as well. So I've done that also on the private side, and I'm also the finance person for the Fountain Creek Watershed District. I'm the treasurer for that board. So I also do this kind of work in private nonprofits and public nonprofits as well. Thank you very much.
Mr. Snyder, you have 1 minute.
Thank you. I really got my start in Manitou Springs, first on council and then as mayor. And, you know, I took over as mayor in 2010 at the nadir of the Great Recession. We went into 2010 with a $60,000 reserve, which is nothing. When I left in 2016, we were able to build that budget up through outsourcing some of our departments like the library district and the dispatch. But when I left, we had approximately $1.4 billion reserve. On boards and commissions, I served on the PPRTA, which is about $80 million now a year. But, of course, the most important thing I've done has been chair of the House Finance Committee and served on that for 6 years. Budgetary principles don't change between Little Manitou Springs and the state of Colorado. There's just a lot more zeros behind those. But I have probably dealt more into budgets, heard more JBC hearings than just about anybody who isn't on the JBC. We have a lot of challenges to face in Colorado, and I feel well prepared to handle those.
All right, and we'll begin with Mr. Snyder. What activities do you support in Colorado Springs or El Paso County, or I should just say in State Senate District 12? You have 1 minute.
I'm sorry, what was it?
So what activities do you support in your district?
Oh, so this, I think, is more of a personal question as opposed to activities. I have to tell you, I think one of the proudest things I do is I show up at everything. Everything that I can make, a breakfast, to something in the afternoon, the evening, a tour of a facility. And I'm not just talking about showing up at the ribbon cutting. I'm talking about really getting involved. Really, all of my constituents reach out to me and tell me, we've got this event, we'd love for you to come. So whether it's Bronc Day up in Green Mountain Falls or down in Fountain at their Labor Day parade and everywhere in between, I show up at all those events. I've been serving the community meal on Thanksgiving and Christmas in Manitou Springs for the last 28 years. I'm very proud to have a smock that has my name on it. You know, they don't just give those to just anybody. But I also ran a Habitat for Humanity for several years back in Prince George's County, Maryland. I started out trail building and worked my way up. I was chair of the Open Space Committee. But really, we have a great community, so much to do. Our natural beauty, we need to promote and protect that.
Thank you, Mr. Snyder. Mr. Vanderwerf, you have 1 minute.
Yes, thank you. So I get involved in a lot of different activities across the county as a county commissioner, but since the question is specifically to Commissioner District 12, I do attend several of the VFW and other veterans organization meetings, particularly in the Fountain area. I also participate in a really large number of Fort Carson activities. This includes dealing with PFOS, PFOA issues, environmental issues in Fountain and in the Fort Carson. I also participate in and have, we voted to support Mount Carmel, which is another agency that supports veterans that's in the district. And I'm just proud to report that I attended and spoke at the groundbreaking for the revitalization of the Manitou Springs Library. With the former mayor of Manitou, I've worked with him side by side, even though we were from different parties, taking graffiti off of rocks. And El Paso County has funded Rainbow Falls quite extensively. That has allowed that park to be used by the Manitou Springs residents. And there's quite a lot more, but it looks like I'm out of time.
All right, and Mr. Vanderwerf, you have 1 minute for this next question. What plans do you have to communicate with your constituents?
Well, thank you. One of the great ways that to communicate with constituents is, of course, to participate in a lot of events. I actually participate in about 30 events every month across the county, so I will continue to do that. But I've also made it known, and it's very important to me, that if anybody is willing to treat me respectfully, I will have a meeting with them. So I do actually respond to inquiries and phone calls from people. And these are people from my party, from not from my party. And I've been able to work with a lot of people. And they usually bring really great ideas and suggestions. So the communication is really just being open, transparent, going to events, and then responding to constituent calls. And also, as an El Paso County Commissioner, we've done several town halls on the west side, and this also includes Green Mountain Falls and other areas like that.
And Mr. Snyder, you have 1 minute.
Thank you. So I've been at this for a while. I've been in the legislature. Even before that, I have regular town halls and invite as many people as I can to come to those. I have a very active social media thread, which frankly I don't do personally. I hire smart young people to handle my social media needs. I'm still a little challenged in that area, but really to promote a lot of things that go on, it's a great way to get the word out. I respond rapidly to constituents when they outreach with a question or a concern. I publish a monthly newsletter every month explaining what's going on at the Capitol, what's going on in our district, and how the things two work together. And I'm very proud that I publish my cell phone number and put it on just about everything I've ever put out there, whether it's a mailer, a flyer, my own campaign business cards. I want people to have that knowledge that when they need help, when they need to get a hold of an elected official, I'm there and I'll answer my phone.
All right. And Mr. Snyder, name your top three priorities for the county and state.
Okay, for the county and the state. Well, when I talked earlier to somebody from League, they were telling me that it was depending on the race you were running for. So let me start with the state. I am committed to finding a way to right size the state government, because right now we collect revenues and then we find out we have a Tabor refund and we have to refund out, you know, billions of dollars back to taxpayers. I would rather we didn't collect that money to begin with. And so I think it's high time we put everything on the table, from Tabor to the revenues that we collect, whether it's through fees or through taxes or severance taxation, licensure, everything else, and all the expenditures we make. I'd like to put all that together on the table and come up with a sustainable future for a pathway for Colorado. I want to continue fully funding education. We just paid off the BS factor. We wrote a new school finance formula that really follows the kids around. And the last thing we have to do is we've got to reduce the costs of living for people in Colorado. I think that starts with health care. We find a way to make it transparency and really address the facility fees that have gotten out of hand.
Mr. Snyder, thank you. Mr. Vanderwerf, top three priorities.
Yes, thank you. I actually polled the district just at the beginning of my campaign, and the top three things that came back to us, the first one was immigration. That surprised me a little bit, but it came in number one. Number two and number three were inflation and the economy. I think that immigration is really more of an expression about public safety, the concerns that we have about the border we have today with regard to bringing in illegal drugs like fentanyl. That has killed a lot of people, actually, in El Paso County now, and also the human trafficking that comes with that. And I have a lot of Democrat friends that are deeply concerned about human trafficking. The other two, immigration and economy, it's very important to me to deal with regulatory burdens that the state has imposed. The state is double in size and budget over the last 10 years, and also doubled in size of regulatory agencies as far as manpower in the last 10 years. And this is the wrong pathway forward for the state. We have not done that in El Paso County. We've done quite the reverse. Without raising taxes, we've increased services and have been able to do that actually with a smaller number of employees than when I first became a county commissioner. Thank you.
All right. And Mr. Vanderwerf, this will be the last of the questions provided by League Women Voters. How do you plan to work with other layers of government? You have 1 minute.
Thank you very much. I have a lot of experience working with a lot of different governments, having been on the board for the PPRTA, having been the chair of the Pikes Peak Area Council of Governments, serving on the State Board of Health as a Governor Polis appointee, and being the former chair of the Board of County Commissioners. This means I've worked with counties across the state. I've worked with local municipalities and other municipalities across the state as well. So I have a lot of experience. I have a great network with that. I'm also the federal liaison amongst the five county commissioners, and I have an extensive amount of extensive network working at the federal level. So planning to work with other layers of government when we have issues that come up, I will engage with counties, municipalities, local governments, HOAs, federal government, state government, the regulatory agencies, and anybody else that would be important for getting the right kinds of answers. And frankly, that's not a whole lot more than just proper stakeholding, which you do need to do if you want to get good policy. Thank you.
And Mr. Snyder, you have 1 minute.
Thank you. I think Commissioner and I share a lot of the same local history, having served in a lot of the same positions. And I agree that is a great way to get to know different entities and the relationship between statutory towns and home rule cities and a county government, especially the state government. In my 6 years up at the Capitol, I have expanded that reach to include all kinds of stakeholders. So I work with the county commissioners and their lobbyists up there to make sure that any legislation that's being introduced works for them. I also have a great relationship with the Colorado Municipal League, and same thing there. I am known as perhaps one of the most intensive stakeholders at the Capitol. I agree that the only way to get good policy is to have all the right people at the table and make sure that everybody has views are heard, they're allowed to express themselves. For having gone through that process so many times, inevitably we get a better end result, a better product at the end, and one that serves the people of Colorado the best.
Okay. All right, let's get into some of the major topics that are facing voters here in our area. Specifically, want to talk about housing, and Mr. Snyder, we'll begin with you for this question. As you both are well aware of, the legislature has passed several bills the past few sessions to try and address the housing shortage in our state. Are the solutions that have been put in place sufficient? And if not, what solutions does the legislature need to consider? You have 1 minute.
Yeah, it's a great question. You're correct. We have passed a lot of historic housing-related bills. Housing is a unique situation. I was 9 years as a title attorney. I conducted about 700 transaction closings. And one thing I've learned is that the market is the greatest single factor. And we're starting to see that finally. But the legislation that we've passed, I had a middle income access housing program, which basically we absorb the land costs at the state. The developer develops the property and agrees to sell it for 80% of market value. But but it takes time for these things to be implemented and work. So we need to work with the market forces that are happening right now. Already we're seeing property values starting to come down a little bit. Vacancy rates are up around 7% when they're usually 2-3%. I don't think government's always the solution, but here there's a case for the government to work in partnership with private industry to develop much more housing stock, which will bring the prices back down to a more reasonable level.
All right. Mr. Vanderwerf, same question to you.
Yes, thank you very much. Housing, of course, is an important issue for citizens in Colorado. As a state senator, I will support and continue to support construction defect reform until that gets passed. It's very, very important. It's a way for people to get more affordable housing in condominiums, which is an excellent way to own a property on a little bit of a smaller scale. I also would support extending the senior homestead exemption, which at present is only authorized for a couple of years. We do need to extend that to a longer period of time. But I want to talk to you a lot about also what we've done in El Paso County. We actually passed tiny home legislation in El Paso County in 2017. You may not know that. But one of the best things for to solve the housing cost issue is to not mess with the market as much as the state has been doing in recent years. The best way to deliver good housing stock is for the market to do its job. Let that development take place. Let it grow naturally. The demand is there, and the developers will want to respond to that demand. So that's what we need to do to improve housing in the community and reduce the cost of housing. Thank you.
Mr. Vanderwerf, thank you. And I'll begin with you for this next question. You mentioned the construction defects bill. It is likely to come up again in the legislature at some point. It did fail this past session. What would need to be in that bill to ultimately gain your support? You have 1 minute.
I think it's important I think it's a matter of advocacy and advocacy in the right way. I believe that construction defect reform slowly over time has been gaining advocates for it. So I would just continue to do that, and I think it would be really important to ultimately get there. The problem with it is right now an individual can sue the developer without giving the opportunity for the developer to rectify the problem in advance. And that really is a natural market approach if you were to just leave it alone. Let the buyer and the developer fix the defect. But right now, the way the law is written, you can actually sue for more than just the value of the condominium that you own. And that has actually caused problems for the developers, problems getting insurance because the liability is so high. And that's really what's been causing a lot of restrictions. So I think talking about those issues and doing it in a diplomatic way, I think will ultimately get us the converts we need to vote for construction defect reform.
Mr. Snyder, same question to you. It did not make it to the House in this legislative session.
Yeah, this has been going on a while. The last big bill was in 2017, which I think it satisfied exactly nobody, the bill, but it was where we are now. The problem we have is that if one unit, say a 30-unit development, finds one construction defect, that is automatically imparted to all 30 of those units, which the trial lawyers are frankly very happy with. The problem is that we don't have any kind of intermediate step. So I've been working in the last 2 years on bills that would allow for a 90-day right to cure period, that would allow the buyer to agree to have that defect fixed. And the problem becomes, should it be done by only the original plumber or contractor that caused the defect? Many buyers are not comfortable. They feel this is the person that caused the problem. I don't want them in here trying to fix it. At the same time, the construction industry has a lot of relationships with a lot of these contractors. They can probably get it done for a lower, if not nominal, cost. But right now, it's a 5% only 5% of new builds are going in condominium. We have to fix that so we can get more condominiums built.
All right. And Mr. Snyder, we'll begin with you for this next question coming from the audience. How will you professionally show or demonstrate that you can act in a civil manner and be open to communicate with the other side to get laws passed and bring true change? You have 1 minute.
Okay. Thank you. I'm very proud of my record in the legislature. I have introduced approximately 120 bills, and about 80 of those are roughly two-thirds were bipartisan bills. That means I was a prime sponsor. I had a Republican prime sponsor. I sponsored 14 bills with Senator Bob Gardner, whose seat we're both running for here alone. So I find the value in that. I think the more diversity of opinion you can have as far as how to approach a problem, the better results we often get. So I'll always reach out and try and find a Republican who's willing to work with me on a bill. And I think not only do we get a better process because it's not filibustered or not on some list that the other side might have of bills, but it facilitates its passage through the houses and both the Senate and the House, and ultimately it leads to a better end result, a more comprehensive solution. And so I'll continue working as one of the most bipartisan legislators in the Senate.
Mr. Vanderwerf.
Yes, thank you. Well, I tell you, a civil manner is very, very important for me. I learned this as an officer in the U.S. Air Force. It's so important to be a diplomat, and I've actually performed diplomatic duties when Betsy and I were stationed in Korea on behalf of the State Department when I was there. I have reached across the aisle. I have a practice of doing that. I have a longtime practice of doing that. And I can cite some specific examples. For example, Lee Milner, bless him, he's passed away now, a well-known Democrat, helped me with some ideas with regard to when we were in COVID. And when we were redistricting El Paso County, Senator Tony Exum recommended the inclusion of 30 precincts in the southeast part of Colorado Springs. And we ultimately included that as a central core requirement for the redistricting in El Paso County, became a central part of it, and it was recommended by Senator Exum, a Democrat, a member from the other party. But also, in addition to that, we've done so much in a nonpartisan way in El Paso County, and I've worked with all kinds of people from Manitou Springs that are not from my party to help make Manitou Springs a better place to live as well. Thank you very much.
And you brought up redistricting, Mr. Vanderwerf. Another audience question. You'll have 1 minute for this. Tell us about your support of House Bill 21-1047, the independent districting committees, on when lines need to be adjusted. You have 1 minute.
Yes. So the independent redistricting committee did that work for the state legislators, and then later on that came in a separate bill for county commissioners. I actually worked with one of the legislators from Boulder with regard to the law that applied to county commissioners to allow for two ways for the redistricting committee to be established. One was an independent redistricting committee, and the other was for the county commissioners. Ultimately, that was accepted, and the amendment to that bill was actually introduced by Senator Pete Lee, and so I'm grateful to him for doing that. And ultimately, I thought it was very, very helpful, because if you were to take a look at some of the independent redistricting committee outputs that were done for the state legislators, they really have some crazy contortions in all of them. I don't know that it was gerrymandering, but it really doesn't look like congruous areas of El Paso County or any other part of the state. And I think that's part of the challenge. I'm not sure they did that job exceptionally well.
Mr. Snyder.
On redistricting.
On redistricting specific to counties.
Oh, 1047.
Yes.
Which was a bill sponsored, I believe, by Representative Kennedy from Lakewood and Senator Pete Lee from right down here in our region. I remember that bill well. I think the Independent Redistricting Commission has done a pretty laudable job in trying to do what is almost an impossible task, is make 100 equally distributed amongst parties districts. So up in Denver, you've got districts that are 85% Democrat. In parts of rural Colorado, you've got districts that are 85% Republican. Trying to merge those is difficult, but I think places like suburban Colorado Springs, where we're running, was a great opportunity to do that. I do think that we lost an opportunity with that bill, and frankly, with Commissioner Vanderwerf's amendment on that. It should have been straight line, just the same as it was with the independent redistricting commissions. They still had to follow a lot of the same rules as far as having meetings in all five commissioner districts, but the county commissioners made themselves the ultimately redistricting commission. There's a reason why El Paso County has been completely Republican for 54 years, and that's because there's a long history of
Mr.
gerrymandering.
Snyder, thank you. Mr. Snyder, we'll begin with you for this next question. What are your plans for promoting sustainability and protecting the environment? You have 1 minute.
Boy, that's a 1 minute's a short time to answer such a question. That has been one of the driving forces up at the Capitol since I've been up there. And to me, yes, I understand. I believe in climate change. I believe in human-caused climate change. I believe in the poor effects of excessive carbon being released into our environment. At the same time, I'm not ready to derail our economy to overnight try and change to a different form of energy. So we've been working really hard at getting alternate forms of energy, solar, geothermal, wind. I know nuclear is now being rediscussed and reexamined. I have some concerns about the safety aspects of that, but gosh, it would be a wonderful solution for us. But I think we need to continue to do what we've been doing and promoting alternative energy sources. But really, it's an all of the above issue for now. We're not going to get out of oil and gas and fossil fuels overnight. Probably not in my lifetime, but it doesn't mean we can stop trying.
All right. Mr. Vanderwerf.
Yes, thank you very much. I agree. 1 minute is not very long to talk about this topic. Just briefly, on the last topic, House District 14 actually was done by an independent redistricting commission and almost goes all the way from Manitou Springs to the east side of the northern entrance of the Air Force Academy. It does not look like a congruous area. With regard to protecting the environment, I'm a strong believer in the need to protect the environment. I am a hiker. I'm a mountaineer. I love the outdoors. To me, it looks like God's cathedral when I'm out there, and I do work to protect it. This, with only 30 seconds left, I'm not going to be able to say much, but we've done a lot of work with regard to ozone issues in the community here, and we've done a lot of work also in El Paso County regarding PFAS and PFOA down in the fountain area, which is definitely environmental issues. There's plenty more to do, and with regard to energy production, it does need to be all of the above. There are nuclear power technologies that are coming out now that are in fact exceptionally safe.
All right, and we'll continue to stick with energy, so you will get to expand on a couple more of these points. Recently, Colorado Springs Utilities proposed rate increases for the next 5 years, citing needs to accommodate growth as well as meeting state regulations. What legislation that has been passed, or Mr. Snyder's case, that you voted for, do you agree with, or is there anything that you would have changed about the way you voted? And how will you ultimately work to address the increasing cost of utility bills? Mr. Vanderwerf, you'll have 1 minute.
Okay, thank you. So one of the challenges that CSU has and the other power utilities is actually a lot of the state legislation that's forcing them down a single path of power production. These kinds of types of power production, wind and solar, are expensive, and they have no hope of delivering sufficient baseload power in order to make sure all of us receive the electricity we need. We really need alternative forms from those two types of energy, and these are the kinds of things I've heard it directly from the CEO of CSU, and he won't come out publicly for it, but it's state legislation that is actually his biggest problem with regard to trying to deliver cost-effective power generation to the residents here. Having said that, they are generally a good, responsible organization, and they try very hard to deliver what they can and stay modern along the way. They did work with the residents here to remove the power plant downtown, and now we have natural gas power generators down there which do need to stay there in order to deliver the baseload electric power that all of us need in our communities.
Mr. Vanderwerf, thank you. Mr. Snyder.
That's another question. It takes a long time to explain, but I'll do my best. I think the transition we're making is being helpful. You know, we've already reduced 20% of our fossil food usage by employing alternative energy sources, but we're not there yet. The problem with alternative energy is it requires a whole new way of thinking. So not only do you have to decide on the source of energy production, you also have to figure out how the distribution system is going to handle that. It's no longer coming from one or two big coal plants. It's coming from spread out all over the place. The last issue is battery storage, because the wind doesn't always blow and the sun doesn't always shine. I think that's where we need to go. This country has a long history of inventing our way out of problems, and I have confidence that we will find a way to make this all integrate together. Until then, I do support natural gas extraction. It's so much cleaner than coal. Coal is kind of gone the way of the dinosaur now. And I think if we promote gas, we'll continue to reduce our impacts, harmful impacts.
All right. I'm going to send things over to Shelley now for quick break here.
And don't go away online either. We have some more questions and answers coming up from our candidates. We're going to give them a short break as we introduce our co-sponsors, our media sponsors, including Studio 809 Podcast and Longmire Audio Engineering. Thank you to you guys in the back. They are bringing our sound and visuals for tonight's forum. Of course, KOAA Channel 5, thank you so much, and KRCC Public Radio. Our other co-sponsors as well, we couldn't do this without you, AARP, Black and Latino Leadership Coalition, Citizens Project, Colorado Latinos Vote, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Latina Equity Foundation, NAACP Colorado Springs, Neighbors for Education, Pikes Peak Diversity Council, Special Kids, Special Families, and Together Colorado, Colorado Springs Faith Table. So in addition to some league events that we have coming up, this Saturday, October 19th, is our ballot issues forum. There is a free lunch to follow for that, to follow after that, just before the 4th Judicial District Attorney's candidate forum in the afternoon at the IBEW. So please join us all day this Saturday, October 19th. Again, Making Democracy Work podcast as well for all of our candidate interviews, all of our candidate forums, community conversations, and so much more. There's a lot of information there. Vote411.org as well. Our candidates have filled out those surveys, so please check those. If you don't have your ballot yet, you should have it shortly. And remember, we are a nonprofit organization, so we appreciate your donations. You can go to our website and donate. And of course, we're a member organization as well. So, and we are not just for women, we accept men members. So please join us and become a member. And always, as always, students are free. So I believe I only have the one elected official in the, I have two elected officials, one. Besides the people up in the front of the room, I have one here sitting in the front row. I'm sorry, sir. My apologies, sir. We missed you at our candidate forum, I believe. So thank you. Is it? I'm sorry. Is it coming up, Mr. Listens? It is Monday. That's right. Sorry. It's been a long day. I apologize. It's a holiday for me today, and it's been a long day. So thank you for joining us, Mr. Liston, Senator Liston. I appreciate you here. I was not aware. And of course, if Julie Ott is behind you as our D11 school board member. Did I miss anybody else besides the senator in the room? Anyone? No? Thank you very much. Appreciate that. All right. Candidates, are you ready for the next question? Great. Thank you. Go ahead, Ms. Allison.
All right. We'll begin with you, Mr. Snyder. This comes from an online audience member thanking both of you for your years of public service and also asking, what is your driving force for seeking this office? Mr. Snyder, you have 1 minute.
I want to follow my good friend Larry Liston into the Colorado State Senate. In all seriousness, I really felt like I have learned so much and been very effective in the Colorado House. Like I said, chair of the House Finance Committee the last 2 years, where we've passed a lot of historic legislation. After redistricting, I found myself now in Senate District 12, a very balanced, perhaps the most competitive race as far as numbers on the ballot this year. So I thought, well, if I've been effective in the House, I think I could be even more effective in the Senate. And I have to tell you, let's be honest, the Senate is not going to flip over to the Republican Party this year. It's going to maintain a Democratic majority. And so I feel having a moderate, thoughtful, hardworking senator who is going to be the third Democrat as opposed to the second Republican on a committee, I will have much more authority to really shape legislation. That's why I want to be a state senator for Senate 12.
Mr. Vanderwerf, you have 1 minute.
Yes, thank you. I'm interested in becoming a state senator just simply because I love to serve. And I got that heart when I was in the U.S. Air Force. I loved serving at the national level and defending the country, and it was such an honor. And then when I retired and I started some of my own businesses, I decided I still wanted to serve in that capacity. I have the skills and the abilities for it, so I ran for county commissioner and was successful with that. I'm now termed out as a commissioner, and I think I can bring the skills and things I've learned about our local community and all the people that I know and the issues that people care about and bring that to the state senate and represent them well at the state level. I do want to also mention that I think it's important for no one party to have a supermajority, and this race does revolve around whether the Democrats have a supermajority in the Senate or not. I will tell you right now that I have Democrats supporting me for this race, because even though they believe a lot in the issues that the Democrat Party brings to the Senate, they do not want a supermajority, because they know that with a balanced legislature, you get better policy.
All right, Mr. Vanderwerf, audience question, and I'll point out you already said that immigration is a top priority for voters here in Senate District 12. What impact has immigration had in Senate District 12 in the last 5 years? Please be specific. You have 1 minute.
Sure. Well, it's a little difficult to have the exact numbers, but there are let's parse this out a little bit. For all legal immigrants, we welcome all of them. The issue is about illegal immigration and the fact that these people broke the law to come into the country while the rest of us are trying to abide by law. And unfortunately, now many of those are just trying to have a better life for themselves, and I can empathize with that. But when we have an open border, we bring fentanyl, we bring other kinds of drug issues, and we bring all kinds of problems, but possibly also terrorists coming into the country. Now, those are federal issues, but at the local level, it's really unfortunate that we passed a bill in the state of Colorado that limits the ability of local law enforcement to work with immigration and custom enforcement. Mark Snyder and I talked about this at our previous debate, and he said there were other good things in that bill, but I want to talk specifically about this particular part, because local law enforcement should be able to talk to any other law enforcement to help us to stay safe.
Mr. Vanderwerf, thank you. Mr. Snyder, same question to you.
I think it is shameful, almost criminal, that the United States Congress over the last 25 years has refused to pass any kind of meaningful immigration reform, because it is a federal issue. You know, you may not realize this, but Colorado doesn't actually have a border with another country. And yet we've seen what's happened when, say, Denver calls itself a sanctuary city, and a lot of people move in there. I'm not familiar with any immigration-related problems in Senate District 12, to be honest with you. Most of the people I know that are of another country are in here on an N-1 visa. They come in to work, whether it's in the construction industry, they work as domestics, they work all kinds of jobs that, frankly, a lot of Americans are not willing to do. So I think our country was built upon immigration. I am for strong borders. We can't have a lawless border where anybody can come across. And like my opponent said, the vast majority of people are here seeking a better life. They're law-abiding citizens. They're not criminals or gang members or any of the other things. The vitriolic...
Mr. Snyder. Thank you. Got to be fair, both of you.
No problem. I'm willing to let him finish his sentence if that's okay.
We've been given special instructions on the time to wrap up your thoughts.
We're all good. It's pretty standard for everybody, but thank you so much.
All good.
Okay. Mr. Snyder, last session you did mention this. Lawmakers eliminated the budget stabilization factor when it comes to education funding, making about $10 billion available for the current school year, as well as updating the school funding formula. Do you feel more changes need to be made? And if so, what are they? You have 1 minute.
Thank you for that question. I am proud of the work we've done to finally get that BS budget stabilization factor paid off and the changes to the school finance formula. I think public education exists for everybody. And we have a very robust choice system in Colorado where parents can decide if they want their kid to go out of district, other things. You know, there's a lot available to a parent to make the right decision for their child. I think we need to recognize that so many of our educational systems are still teaching as if all kids are going to a four-year college. That's not true. Only about half actually enroll, and only about a third actually get a four-year degree. So I am committed to creating more apprenticeships, internships, trades, building up the trades, great careers out there. You come out as an electrician, a journeyman, you're looking at, you know, $30 plus an hour with a lot of great benefits. So we really need to do all of the above. We need to start training our kids for the jobs that are going to be available in the next 10, 20 years as best we can figure them out.
Mr. Vanderwerf.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm also a big fan of parents' choice. I think it's very important that parents have the opportunity to bring their kids to a school if their child is presently in a school that's underperforming. I also am a big supporter of the trades. As the former chair of the Pikes Peak Workforce Center, we worked with the trade establishments that we have in town here, including the unions, to enhance the trade skills that we have in the communities here, because college is not always made up for every kid. But I have to tell you that what we also need is more efficient use of the taxpayers' dollars in our schools and more efficient use of our taxpayers' dollars in the state government. We have very inefficient processes today. I'll give you one example. You know, we've been growing administrators in our public schools and have not been growing our teachers. And we actually really do need to reverse that trend. The money that goes into schools needs to go to teachers and go to more teachers. That's where that investment really needs to be. But that's not where it's been going in the last few years. So thank you.
Mr. Vanderwerf, we'll begin with you. Youth suicide in El Paso County more than doubled in 2023 compared to 2022, with 10 kids taking their own lives. What resources need to be made available to address what's being called an epidemic among kids in our area?
I'm sorry, I missed the question. I heard something was doubled. I missed the first part of it.
Sorry, youth suicide.
Oh, thank you.
In
okay.
El Paso County more than doubled in 2023 compared to 2022?
Well, I tell you, I think that's actually an artifact of some other challenges that we have in our community with regard to having cohesive communities, cohesive families. And these are real issues that I think are some problems. I'm telling you, I don't think bigger government is the answer for those kinds of issues. What we really need to do is work together as citizens. And I'll mention that I'm really proud of the fact that Mayor Yemi created this 1,000 block party activity in Colorado Springs. And he didn't get to 1,000, he got to about 870. But the whole point of that was to get people in our communities to meet their neighbors, get to know their neighbors a little bit better. You just never know how you might make a friend and actually help them out. But this also includes helping our kids, because maybe what that kid needs is a few other neighbors around them to take care of them while their parents are at work. And these kinds of things reduce loneliness, and loneliness is one of the causes of that. And I'm out of time, and there's so much more I could talk about this, but I'll have to stop there. Thank you.
Mr. Snyder.
So that is a very, very sobering and sad statistic, the increase that you just mentioned here in El Paso County. At the state level, we're a little slow to recognize the growing problem. Certainly the pandemic exacerbated it, but we've put approximately $600 million into behavioral health. It takes a while to ramp that money up, but I think it's the isolation and the social media for sure, a lot of kids where they are in the parents' basement on social media, not really out interchanging with the world, with a lot of their fellow friends. Things have just gotten kind of ugly, and I think, unfortunately, they take the lead from our political leaders, at the national level especially, where you have divisiveness and scorn and hatred being spewed up there. I think that has a trickle-down effect all the way to kids. I think what we need to do is to really have a behavioral health professional in every school. We already have it, so everybody's entitled to one free behavioral health checkup. We need to do more of that.
Mr. Snyder, thank you. Let's talk about wildfire mitigation. Obviously, top of mind here in State Senate District 12, really all of Western El Paso County. Both of you have certainly been involved in various wildfire mitigation efforts, but talk to me specifically about the type of legislation you would introduce related to our wildfire risk here at home. You have 1 minute, Mr. Snyder.
Thank you. Well, you may remember I was mayor of Manitou Springs in 2012 when the Waldo Canyon fire broke out. And thank goodness nothing burned in Manitou, but that was the beginning of our problems was when the fire went out. Because we had 2 years of devastating mud flows and debris flows and flooding, and we lost about 70 buildings were either completely gone or heavily damaged. So I've served on the Wildfire Interim Committee up in the legislature for 6 years. I was chair of that committee. I've passed about 14 bills dealing with wildfire mitigation, creating a grant program that originally started out just to be for jurisdictions that have a dedicated tax for mitigation. And I realized quickly that was a handful of counties and cities. So we expanded that. And really, I learned that from Colorado Springs. They've dedicated $20 million, $1 million a year over the next 20 years for matching funds. So I retailored that bill so that it fit in with communities like Colorado Springs. I've been up with Governor Polis up Ute Pass and talk to the communities up there like Green Mountain Falls. There's a lot going on in that space. We can't let up.
And just 30 seconds for a quick follow-up. What additional legislation would you introduce if you were elected to this seat?
Well, this year I chose not to sit on the Wildfire Committee. I like to have turnover, some new faces. Instead, I'm sitting on the Pension Review Commission this summer. So I'm not sure what they're looking at in particular, but I think what I've done is a lot of bills, and I would want to continue doing this, protecting our wildland firefighters, making sure they have full benefits, access to the heart and lung program, because it's such an inherently dangerous job. We've bought 2 Firehawk helicopters, which really have helped out. I think we need to continue on that program and be ready. And cameras in the mountains worked in California, but I've had many smart people tell me why it won't work in Colorado.
All right. Mr. Vanderwerf,
you yes, have 1 minute. Well, I'll talk briefly after I give what I think would be the legislation I would like to introduce, and then I'll talk briefly about the achievements that I've had in El Paso County in this area. I'm interested in creating a statewide modeling office. That modeling office will use stochastic modeling, which can model evacuations to determine if we've got proper infrastructure set up for those. It can also be used to deal with transportation infrastructure. And I can tell you there was a recent bill, a densification bill, that was passed at the state that actually is a problematic for the city of Colorado Springs because it requires densification in some of our transportation corridors that are needed for evacuation. But as a county commissioner, I was able to get $18 million for the Pike National Forest, and they're using that right now for forest mitigation west side and north of Highway 24. And El Paso County, partly due to my leadership, is doing exercises, practice exercises of several communities across the west side. I also sit on the State Homeland Security Advisory Committee, which I must say doesn't actually achieve much and really does need to do more on behalf of the state, and I'm out of time. Thank you.
All right, let's continue with wildfire mitigation, though. Mr. Vanderwerf, I'll begin with you for this question. Speaking of the interim committee, I know Mr. Snyder said you previously served on it. Discussion has come up over the state investing $7.5 million to continue a partnership for wildfire AI applications. Is this something you would support? Why or why not? Mr. Vanderwerf, you have 1 minute.
Well, I do have to tell you that I'd have to look at that to see what they intend on doing with that bill, but I do have a problem with the terminology of artificial intelligence. In some of my military assignments, we've worked on some pretty sophisticated capabilities, and we really have not truly achieved artificial intelligence yet. That's actually many years off. That is a buzzword being used today, but what they actually are is what's called smart systems. These are things that are pretty sophisticated and can make a lot of determinations about ways to go forward. But I will mention that my simulation idea, the modeling office, is in fact what would deliver the right kinds of evacuation outcomes that we're looking for. That would be a better approach than $7.5 million for AI applications.
Mr. Snyder.
Thank you for the question. I have some concerns about AI, and I have carried 2 bills in my time in the legislature dealing specifically with evacuation modeling, and we're not there yet. The science isn't ready to divulge that. We can never usurp or try to take the authority of the incident commander on the ground in real time to make real time decisions. So I've been trying to produce a more forward facing type of website. Really what we need is pre-evacuation noticing to people. That's when the evacuation routes and options can be most effective. We saw what happened in the campfire out in California, where approximately 85 people died. 69 of them burned in their cars trying to evacuate. Same thing happened in Maui. So that's what we need to avoid. We need to spread it out. When you're told that the fire is coming, when you're on pre-evacuation notice, that's the time to get out. Not the time all at once when cars get backed up and tires explode and people die.
All right. Let's talk property taxes. Mr. Snyder, I'll begin with you for this question, and you have 1 minute. Obviously, as you know, special session lawmakers addressed this. Is that compromise enough? If it is not, what needs to be done? Or did it go too far? You have 1 minute.
Just a brief history. When the voters repealed the Gallagher Amendment, we should have stepped right in and come up with a plan. And we dropped the ball. We didn't. Some people will say, well, 2020 was a pandemic. I actually carried the bill, not this most recent special session, but the previous special session last November, the bill that created the Property Tax Commission, which brought all the proper stakeholders together. It became the basis for property tax relief that we passed during the special session. I actually wanted to go $400 million further in property tax relief. I lost that debate up at the Capitol. We came back in special session and basically accomplished that. So I think, we gave relief to people immediately as far as reducing the valuations and reducing their actual tax liability. Nobody's taxes went down because of this, below where they were, but the increases were blunted and held to a level. But more importantly, we created a sustainable model for the future. So we have capped assessment rates and valuation increases to basically 5.5%, 6% for schools. That'll make a big difference going down the road.
Mr. Vanderwerf.
Yes, I would agree that separating Gallagher from Tabor was a huge mistake, and it was really a fault of the legislature to not produce an alternative to that at that time. As a result of that, we've had two special sessions, a whole lot of debates, and I still don't think it's entirely resolved. This has now had to fall upon local government, including El Paso County, where we've had to take specific action with regard to this. And last year, which is applying for 2024, we actually reduced our mill levy in El Paso County by 20%. And this year, our budget proposal for 2025 is to reduce it a further 13%. But I can tell you what we really see at the state level is an enormous amount of tinkering and not really solving the problem. I think we need a completely different approach where we put a lot more of the responsibility and onus onto local government, and they can deal with the local issues that they have in their own communities.
Okay, we are actually entering the final 5 minutes of tonight's forum. So we are going to get into closing statements, and I just want to double check that I've got the order here correct. Yes, Candidate Vanderwerf, we'll begin with you. You will have 2 minutes to wrap up your final thoughts for this evening.
Yes, thank you very much. I am seeking your vote for State Senate District 12. I would be honored to serve all of you. I make a promise to all of you that if we can have a respectful conversation, I'll meet with you anytime, anywhere to talk about whatever issues and concerns that you may have. I've got the background and experience. I've got 8 years as an El Paso County Commissioner. I have been all over the community going to a lot of events. I've met a lot of people. Regardless of where they come from or who they are. I've got a lot of support for this campaign. So I would just love that opportunity to work with my fellow senators and the other legislators that we have to really do what we can to make Colorado a better place. And I'm going to take the skill sets that we've talked about briefly and work on a lot of issues in the state. And one of the big ones is regulatory burden. I do want to mention just this spring, I was at a small business forum. We had 85 small business owners there, and their number one issue, number one, it wasn't number two, was state regulatory burdens. And some of them were talking about the fact that the state regulations are not even stable. Their problem is they can't keep up with all the changes that are taking place in the state. It's very, very difficult if you're a one or a two-person company to even keep track about all the changes that's taking place at the state level. So what we really need to do is simplify law, improve the efficiencies of our regulatory agencies, and I'm an industrial engineer with that skill set. The whole point of industrial engineering is to deal with process improvements. That's a skill set I've been exercising as an Air Force officer and as a county commissioner, and I can tell you in the county, we doubled road repairs, we quadrupled our emergency reserves, we added county parks. We did that all without raising taxes, and now we have in El Paso County the highest bond rating that you can get for a public agency, and very few public agencies across the nation have that, but we've achieved that in El Paso County. So I am asking for your vote. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Snyder, your two-minute closing statement.
Thank you. So I got a call today from someone, and it was Governor Jared Polis, and he called to tell me that he was proud to endorse my candidacy, that he's always respected me as a legislator, and he looks forward to working with me. And I have gotten endorsements from Speaker of the House, the Chair of the JBC, many other leading elected officials, and I'm very honored and proud of that, including Richard Scorman down here in the Springs, a unaffiliated voter. I have a list right here of over 35 organizations that have endorsed me, and it's quite a variety of lists. I'll just read a few of them. The Colorado Chamber of Commerce, the Fraternal Order of Police, the Colorado AFL-CIO, the CEA, Sierra Club, One Colorado, the Association of Realtors, the Professional Firefighters, PPEA, CSEA, Secure Para, and CO-IDD, the Colorado Intellectual and Development Disability Organization. I'm very proud to have those endorsements. And if you might notice, there are a lot of variety there. You don't often get the chamber endorsement and then the endorsement of many, many labor unions also, or get the endorsement of Fraternal Order of Police, while at the same time getting endorsed by all the gun violence prevention organizations. I've worked hard to get their trust and support, and I'm very proud of that. So I'm a proven leader with a strong bipartisan legislative record. I've sponsored and passed over 60 pieces of bipartisan legislation. I've been endorsed by teachers, firefighters, police, workers, and the Colorado Chamber of Commerce. I stand for democracy, public education, collective bargaining, reproductive freedom, religious freedom, diversity, equity, equality, environmental justice, and civil rights. I stand with labor, teachers, law enforcement, firefighters, business owners, families, veterans, the LGBTQT plus community, and communities of color. I stand against racism, fascism, misogyny, religious coercion, and bigotry. I am Mark Snyder, and I humbly ask for your vote this November of Senate District 12.
Thank you so much. Can we get a round of applause for your candidates, please? That wraps up our live and virtual forum for Colorado State Senate District 12. We will have State Senate District 10 on Monday. Thank you very much. Thank you to the Community Prep School for allowing us to use their awesome facility tonight. We thank you for joining us this evening. Again, these recordings are available on the League of Women Voters of the Pikes Peak Region website at lwvppr.org, on our YouTube channel under Live, and on our League's Making Democracy Work podcast. We will be having another forum on Thursday, double header on Thursday. So thank you again. Hopefully those are one of your districts. So thank you, everybody. Until next time, hopefully we'll see you there.